Pete Townsend spent decades writing rock operas like Tommy and Quadrophenia and touring the globe with one of its biggest bands, The Who. His music with The Who helped to define rock and roll for his generation of post-war youth, as well as those that followed.
People try to put us to down.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my
Turns out that one of the best writers in rock loves storytelling as much as he loves composing, and he has finally composed the story of his own life for the page. Townsend's new memoir, Who I Am, is a compendium of conflict between the private self and public performer, between being a legend and an all-too-human husband and father, between addiction and sobriety, longing and belief, and maybe most of all, between being a very young child and looking back at that child's life, who perhaps is at the heart of everything Pete Townsend has done with The Who. But we want to ask, what was your Who moment? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. It took Pete Townsend a long time to write that young boy's memoir, that man's memoir, but he has done it, and it is stunning, and we want to welcome him here to the studio. Pete Townsend, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
So would you tell us about this journey? You take us through over 500 pages. There's not a lot that it seems you've held back. And as a very, very, you are the definition of the word superstar, you get to craft a lot of your own story. But in this book, you share a lot of really candid doubts. And I'm wondering if it was perhaps more cathartic to put it on the page as a writer, as opposed to putting it into songs as you've done for so many decades.
Well, I've tried to avoid catharsis in my songwriting. I've tried to make sure that when I sat down and exercised that particular craft, that I served the true master, which is, of course, the audience, and the audience that I grew up with, the neighbourhood crowd that I grew up with, who are now in my age group, my demographic, 50 to 70 years old. You know, I still, when I sit to write a song, I want to write songs that touch those guys. And so this book... of course, it was in a sense cathartic, but this is stuff that, you know, as I was writing it, I thought, you know, I've got to try to bring some new stuff here, because I've talked about myself so much. Mm-hmm. Tommy, for example, had a strong unintentional autobiographical thread, and odd other songs that I've worked on in the past have had that. So I've referred to that, and in so doing, I've talked about my childhood with my dad, with my grandmother, my mother, who went through an errant period and a difficult period of her own, and then joining the band when I was very young, my art school years, all of that stuff I've talked about. So the catharsis in this for me was really when I'd finished it and put it down and looked back, was a sense of gratitude that I'd survived.
Mm-hmm.
And really just simply that. No, and I don't mean survived a terrible, terrible life, but just that that I'd managed to survive the writing of the book.
Well, there's that. It did take, I think, about 12... You thought about it even in your 20s, then you thought about it for about 12 years going on. Let's go back to your early childhood. There's a beautiful section of this book called Letter to My 8-Year-Old Self, which you actually compose. Your family, you're born on May 19th, 1945, 2 weeks after VE Day, 4 months before the end of World War II, in Acton, a London suburb. And it was a difficult period in your life, living with your grandmother, Denny. What was confusing about that time?
You know, the confusion for me was really that before I went to live with my grandmother, I had the most wonderful time. My earliest memory is between maybe 13, 15 months old. I can remember being on a beach with my parents riding horses. I made it the theme of my short story book for Faber, Horse's Neck, and that memory. And then I have memories of being on the band bus with my mum and dad. You know, she was singing in the band sometimes. My dad was playing saxophone. And there was this cranky old bus, and I can remember driving up English country lanes and then arriving at a wonderful dance hall. And I'm a little kid, you know, I'm a tiny kid, and I I really don't. I don't have any difficulty at all with life in those times. I was happy. I knew I was on the right side of the blanket. I was, I was on the right side of the curtain. The audience were out there. I knew who they were, and I knew who I was. And I knew then, I think, even at 4.5 years old, who I was going to be. But when I was 4.5 years old, my mother found a lover, a rich lover. She was fed up with my dad touring, always being away. He spent a lot of time. He was in an Air Force band, so he played a lot in Germany. She sent me to live with my grandmother, who was very, very ill, mentally deranged, spoiled, strange, Victorian, over disciplinarian, and certainly not loving. And so the contrast was what was so awful, and I blacked it out. But when I was about 6.5, just before I turned 7, in fact, the month before I turned 7, my parents got back together again and took me back. And so then life was wonderful again. I was back with the band, back with the colourful parents, glamorous parents. So my life has always been about these extremes. All right. And I found those extremes too when I started to work with the band.
Well, let's get our callers in here because we've got so many people who are eager to talk to you. Bill is calling from Oklahoma City. Welcome to Talk of the Nation. Bill. I think we have lost. Let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Peoria, Illinois.
Hi, Mrs. Hudson, or Pete. I'm not sure what to call you, but...
Call me Pete.
I just wanted to say thanks for all that you've given the audience. I mean, you've been the rock star that's really focused on the audience. And in particular, one thing, Naked Eye is my favorite song of The Who, anyway, from The Who that you've written. And it just really helped me in 26 years ago when I was a freshman in college to realize that, you know, maybe everyone's just as screwed up as I am. I don't know. You know, from garage bands that tried to imitate you, thank you for all the finger notes you gave your audience and windmilling. And just thanks for everything you've been. I really appreciate reading the book.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoy the book. You know, that thing about being screwed up, you know, I just come from this press conference that Roger has put up about trying to persuade people to do better treatment for teenagers recovering from cancer. And we've been talking about teens all the time. And it would be an unusual teenager. It would be an unusual late teenager that didn't have problems of some sort. So it's been easy to write songs for screwed up people, because I think we all get a bit screwed up when we're teens. So anyway.
Thank you. Thanks for that call, Jeff. We're getting a number of emails, too. This is from Russ Mitchell. He said, I was 16 years old, driving my 1968 Camaro, a loser at love, listening to Behind Blue Eyes. Nobody knows what it's like to be the sad man, obviously. And it hit exactly the right chord, and I immediately felt understood. And I still love that song today. Thanks, Pete. And that's from Berkeley, California. And another one here, Paul Peters, I'm the world's biggest Pete Townsend fan. To prove it, I named my oldest son Townsend. Yes, Pete, this is real. Quadrophenia and your writing changed my life. It helped make me the man I am today. Coming from a home with a weak and or absent father figure, this music made me feel okay. With the changes of growing up an inner-city kid from Chicago, I should send you a Father's Day card every day. And he says, I'm going to see The Who in Boston this week. You know, you write that early on in your life, you wanted, with The Who, to make the kind of music that would become, I'm saying here now, anthemic. Your words are a part of people's lives. Even more than the way we dressed, our music would give voice to what we all needed to express as a group, as a gang, as a fellowship, as a secret society, as subversives. I saw pop artists as mirror of the audience developing ways to reflect and speak truth without fear. You know, and I was thinking, who did you think you were at the time? I mean, you're a young man writing that, but that's a big assignment.
I'm writing back also in retrospect. I'm writing looking back. Who did I think I was? I definitely in the early days of the Who knew that I wanted more than anything, more than being a performer, more than being a songwriter, more than providing any service for the audience, I wanted to be an artist. And I was teased about that. I was teased about that because it seemed pretentious to claim to be an artist when you're playing guitar in a silly rock band who smashed their guitars and wore jackets made of flags. So nonetheless, you know, I wanted to operate as an artist. And as an artist, my brief was that I wanted to serve my audience, and my audience were the people in front of me. So that was the job. And so I thought I was doing that job. I thought I was actually doing... And it's interesting that being in a pop band... in the 60s, for me, my role was not just entertaining, it was also slightly journalistic. You know, I would talk to people, I would find out what was going on in their heads, I would observe them very, very closely. I would try to find things about them that would enrich not only my craft, but that would touch them. And Quadrophenia grew out of the fact that, you know, for a lot of the time, I didn't have that kind of access to the audience. I had to just look at the four guys in the band. I had to measure our audience through looking at them, and they were four, including myself, very eccentric characters. So I still like to think of myself as, above everything else, as an artist with a stroke of journalism.
Well, you're very welcome into the sorority and fraternity. Let's take another call here from Elizabeth. She's calling from Boise, Idaho. And Elizabeth, let me just say, before we come to you, that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And welcome, Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Pete. Nice to talk to you. My first concert ever was in 1980 at your first farewell tour at the Coliseum, and I was 12, and it was such a great concert. I can still remember it. And my older brother introduced me to your music, and you're one of my favorite bands of all time.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you.
It was a great concert, and the Clash was there, and it was fun. It was very L.A.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, isn't it, that we managed to bring the Clash to the USA. When we played two nights at Shea Stadium, the Clash got to play two nights at Shea Stadium and prove that they were not just a great band for the, you know, the punk clubs of London, but that they could play a big stadium. They were a very, very, very good band at playing big, big places. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, it was a great concert.
Thanks.
Thank you for that, Carl. Elizabeth, let's take another one. Todd is calling from Evansville, Indiana. Welcome to Talk to the Nation, Todd.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Todd.
Hey, you know, my Who moment, Pete, was I had written you a letter back in 1999, and you were getting ready to tour Lifehouse Chronicles, and you were going to tour with the Who and play a lot of stuff from Who's Next and all. And I had offered you a guitar, which is going to be a Lifehouse guitar, and at the time I was in the Army, and you had Nicola Joss track me down and to where to send my letter that you're going to reply to, and you tracked me all the way down in Bosnia. And,
Bosnia.
In Bosnia, I was deployed to Bosnia.
Wow.
And it was not just a great morale boost to me, but everybody in my unit.
Cool.
And it was like, you know, I knew all the charity work that you'd done and are doing, and the great progress that you're making with that. But it's also that you all take time to do these little things and write us back. And you know, it does great things.
Well, Nicola's here with me today, so she'll be pleased to hear that, because she's really good at this stuff and she's really good at detail, but, you know, has a very, very a good insight into how this works. You know, it's been in the entertainment industry for years and worked for me for a long time. But, yeah, it's great to know that sometimes when you take the trouble, it works. It's an interesting story, Todd. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Pete.
God bless.
One of the things that really comes through in this memoir is you do have this dialogue with yourself, and you do have resolution. And I was thinking, how do you bring the audience with you? This is how. It continues to be a dialogue with them, also with you. And you've written that maybe you could have just been a composer, but I think you need the audience. You need people to talk to.
I do, but I perhaps not in the healthiest way. It's interesting because, you know, I talk about my childhood at the feet of my father. I write honestly about the fact that I've never really made what you would call a proper human social connection with people that I regard as the ticket buyers. I don't see them as customers. I don't see them as you know, a different kind of people. I don't see them as plebs. I don't see them as people that I can use in any way. But I certainly see them as being different. Now, that's very interesting because if I go and sit in an audience, I am one of them. But it's something... The part of the process of writing the book, which did echo the way that I write, is that the dialogue that I had with myself, where I would look back and I would often ask questions like, why didn't I just stop? Or why didn't I just give myself a break here? I don't really know what the answers were, but to some extent, you know, I know that it's quite certain that if I had asked that question of two or three people in the audience, they would have been able to answer it for me.
We're so glad you didn't stop. Thank you so much for coming by, Pete Townsend. His new memoir is Who I Am. And tomorrow we'll talk about Who's Hunting Now. And thank you. Thank you, Pete Townsend.
Thanks
for
having me. Thanks for having me.
And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Jackie Lydon in Washington.